Well, in our Tuesday show, we are going to adjust things slightly in 2025. Instead of Rob Herzhoff and I talking about the latest in business, we are going to bring in a guest every week to help us to focus perhaps on a matter of the week. And this week, it's rather personal for me. It's the potential destruction of my hometown. Well, the hometown I used to live in, I grew up in, spent much of my life there, my childhood there. It's the town of Newcastle, which is going to have its steel plant closed down. Final decision came through last week. Gerard Papenfuss is from NIASA, the National Employers Association of South Africa. He thinks it's not a bad thing. Rob Herzhoff, I'm sure, will feel the same way. Me, I'm here to represent the Newcastle man, sir, and perhaps to see whether there isn't another way that this could have been handled. We'll also be talking about other items of interest. But maybe, Rob, just before we bring Gerard in, I hope you had a good, relaxing December and break over the time, because you've got a big year in 2025, as all of us have, in unpacking the absolute insanity that seems to pass by way of normal operations here in our beautiful country.
Yeah, I had a fantastic holiday, a lot of different things. I actually did a 24-hour trip to Antarctica, which was breathtaking. It was something extraordinary. I tell people I went for dinner in Antarctica. Sounds a lot crazier than what we did. And I had a fantastic time, but I probably had 3 days more holiday than I needed. So I'm itchy and ready to get back in action. And I'm thrilled to be here and thrilled to be on this with you, Alec, and with Gerard.
Have you ever been to Newcastle, my hometown?
I think I've driven past it and flown over it a lot, but no, the answer is no.
And Gerard, have you ever been to Newcastle?
Yes. Yes.
How often? How well do you know the place?
Well, not that well. I've been there, and the town has declined over years, like many places have declined. But, you know, what's about to happen there is devastating. So, you know, when we have the AMSA debate, is not that we're not sensitive about what will transpire in Newcastle when this happens. This is huge. I mean, this is devastating. It will hit the town in all respects, not only all AMSA employees, all the subcontractors. The Dubai Empire in the town will decline. It will impact on every person and every child in the town.
And the astonishing thing is that it's the third biggest town in KwaZulu-Natal, and it's almost, well, it's heavily reliant on AMSA, which used to be ISCO and so on. But maybe let's just put a little bit of the background here. Rob, from an economic perspective, and I'm sure you and Gerard are on exactly the same page here, when there are subsidies, eventually they catch up with you. And perhaps you could just outline how you feel about the way that ArcelorMittal has been operating in South Africa, and then we can bring Gerard in with his thoughts and perhaps discuss those in more detail.
So ArcelorMittal in South Africa has been the primary steel producer, and they're closing down their longs plant. Long means long steel. And it's a disaster, and it's a disgraceful situation, and the government needs to take the blame. It's terribly hard doing business in this country in any case, and to have a reputable international company like ArcelorMittal pull out of this incredible business is a disaster for South Africa, a disgraceful situation for the government. And, you know, I'm a libertarian, so I believe in small government. I believe in selling state-owned enterprises. I believe in getting rid of BEE, which is theft. The government love adding regulation, adding all these non-important issues day after day after day, which impede the free market. And when you look at South Africa from an international point of view, who in their right mind would invest here? We're deindustrializing. I think we've gone from, get this statistic wrong, but 20% of GNP down to 10%, the manufacturing industry. We're soon going to be an agricultural, mining at best, and services country. and unemployment will be 90%. And the ANC has to take full responsibility for this disaster. And Parks Tower should be tarred, feathered, and thrown out of the government. But you know what happens to ANC members. They never do get thrown out. They just could move to another job. I mean, they are absolutely useless and incompetent. Now, I could blame the GNU, but, you know, the DA and IFP and PA have only been in power 6 months. So, and, you know, they're putting lipstick on the pig. I think the DA needs to take over trade and industry. Parks Tower out, fire the guy, boot him out like gangsters like Becky Taylor or useless ministers like Naledi Pandor and Gwede Mantashe. And unless we do a full clean out at the top, this country is finished. We're deindustrializing, falling apart, and losing ArcelorMittal is a disaster. That's now, the macro side of it.
Gerard, from your perspective, you agree to a degree, certainly the stuff that you've written for what Rob says, but I think you would disagree on the loss of the long steels. And just for those people who don't understand, there are two types of steel that is produced by ArcelorMittal in South Africa. Is what's called longs, which is what it suggests, railway lines, things like that. And then there's flats. And flats is what it suggests as well, steel plates. Now, there are two longs factories in South Africa, one in Vereeniging, the other one in Newcastle. Newcastle's by far the biggest. They are going to be closed down. The flats, which is in Vanderbijl Park, will be continuing. So just so that people understand a little bit of the technicals. But help us through, you write in there, a lot of your members are in on the steel chain. How are you seeing this development?
I'm going to give you a bit of history, very short. 2015, there was a 5% duty on the importation of steel, 5%. Rob Davis then said that had to go because he said we need a developmental price on steel. But immediately after that, Lakshmi Mittal from the international company, AMSA International, came to South Africa. They had a meeting with Jacob Zuma. And they immediately after, thereafter, introduced a 10%. So government then realized and recognized for a steel industry to prosper, you need good quality, affordable steel. But that set in motion a thing that would have eventually killed this thing, AMSA. I mean, that moment, they started to put AMSA on life support. Now, the moment you put a person on life support, the end is near. Because you'll have to introduce it, more medicine, more oxygen. So where did we end up? In long steel, in beginning of December, they introduced another, on top of 9% duties, at that point, another 52% duties. Now, can you imagine a person that's ordered steel from China? He paid 10 million rand for it. By the time he gets to the port through customs, he pays another 50% on duty on that. That's another 5 million. When he gets to his factory, he put a 50% on the price. So the guy that's ordered to build a store will say, no, I can't do it. You just increased the price by 50%. That's killing the market. AMSA, we've said in 2015, we went back and said, this will set in motion the death of this industry because you're protecting this animal for a while, but you're killing his customers. You make it unattractive. And here's the thing that Newcastle will be losing perhaps not to 3,500, maybe let's say 2,500. We don't know how many jobs. But, you know, when it happens to one town, it's a big story. When it's happening daily at a company employing 10, 20, 30, 40 people, that's not a story. When a company retrench 5 people, 10 people, 20 people, 33. And when a company that's 10 years ago employed 150, now employ 50 people. That's not news because it didn't happen overnight. And when it happens in Brits, that's not news. Who cares? So the industry is losing this portion of AMSA, but we've lost tens of thousands of employees throughout. And that never reached the news because we don't have the spin and the capacity to get out there and to put the spin on everything. AMSA has got a entire communication team dealing with this. But this has been killing the industry. It set in motion a slow decline. Now, that's not only steel. I mean, we're talking about collective bargaining and all these things, that crazy wages. The fact is, this is a very unfriendly market, and we're talking steel now. And I agree with Rob 100%. We see what is happening, and the ANC, these socialists, just do not understand it, because I think, in reality, I don't think they know where money comes from. They will explain it's printed or made at the mint, you know. No, but really, do you know where money comes from? No, they don't, because they never made it. They get it through taxes. And the country is economically in slow decline. So what is happening with long steel? Well, what is South Africa saying? And this is what we say. If you cannot compete, well, don't be here. Sorry, we'd love to manufacture, but if we want to be a manufacturing country, then we'll have to get rid of red tape. We'll have to stop telling business how to conduct your business, who to employ, who partners do you have to take in. That goes directly against the spirit of entrepreneurship. If you tell a guy, you listen, in South Africa, you want to be an entrepreneur, but remember, we'll tell you who to do business with, where to buy from, who your partners need to be, and who to employ. And then you'll say, no, I will not open a business in South Africa. I'll go somewhere else. It is impossible. An entrepreneur cannot do it. It goes against the spirit of an entrepreneur.
Okay, but before you go any further into that, just so that we can get this off the table, and there's much of what you said that is going to resonate with the business tribe, unquestionably. But right now, the Chinese economy is under pressure. They've got lots of steel plants. They're producing steel like it's going out of fashion. They are dumping that on international markets, including on South Africa. And that is not sustainable for any company, any country, because at some point in time, that dumping may end. And then you enjoyed the benefit of the cheap steel initially, but you've got no fallback position. And that's really the argument that Donald Trump is using in the United States. And I think both of you are Trump supporters. So, I don't know about you, Gerard, but Rob certainly is. So he's using that argument. Yeah, we sit in South Africa and say, actually we can't compete. So rather just go ArcelorMittal, close it down. And by the way, the knock-on effect of those 3,000 jobs in Newcastle is massive. It's tens of thousands of people in Newcastle. There's a whole supply chain. It's almost like a motive plant where, VW is in Eitnach, and if VW were to close down there, you wouldn't just lose the VW workers. There would be many, many thousands of others who would knock on. So for Newcastle, this is a big story. There's a big, big story here. But I think one needs to address that. Yeah, be careful of what you want, because at some point in time, you might pay for it.
Like the point is, if China is dumping steel on the market globally, well, then they dump it on the market globally. So if we don't take advantage of that now, somebody else will. So what happens, we cannot take advantage of the cheapest steel from China, but somebody else in Africa does that. So we pay more year for steel, but all of a sudden, our export market into Africa is closed. So that's the one point. So we haven't took advantage of that, the advantage of a cheaper steel for the moment. So we've lost that market. But let's say China at one particular point cannot give us more affordable, good quality steel. Well, then you buy it somewhere else. Then you go to Vietnam, or you go to Italy, or you go to India. Then you go to the market and you say, where can we procure good steel? It is, why do we buy it from China now? Because it is the easiest place to buy it, but it's not the only place. So China competes with the world, and they're winning that battle at the moment. But if there is a point where they cannot sell it to us anymore at a good price, well, then we go to somewhere else. The market, it's like water. It flows
It takes the easiest route. And a businessman will immediately, if China says we cannot give it you or the Chinese price becomes unrealistic, then we will immediately import it from somewhere else. That's how the global market operates. So I'm not concerned about China at a particular point says we're not going to give it to you more at this cheap price if something changes. Well, steel is made in many other places. Now, just to come back to Trump, we have one primary steel producer in South Africa, and they dictate the market. They compete with nobody. Their competition is outside of our borders, and when there's competition, they simply ask for duties. Trump buy from where he wants. There's competition in America. So that's why he can afford to do it because he has the capacity. We do not have the capacity because we rely on one monopoly, and they dictate. And they are telling government because there's a daar's 'n buil oor die kop van die regering. If you are, and this is exactly what's happening. Amstel says, you either give this to me or I'll close. But there's a point where the government says, well, you know what, we've tried to help, but we shouldn't have helped you from the place. It's like drugs, you know. You start using it, you need to increase the doses continuously. But instead of investing in South Africa and buy and build a mill that could produce it. But AMSA is 70 years old. Goodness. I mean, I'm surprised they're not using donkey cars still. You know, it's 70 years old. And they just do not invest in this place because there's no need, because there's duties. They protect it not through competition. They do not compete because they protect it through duties.
Okay, Rob, I know you're champing.
Listen, what I agree with Gerard. I think day one was the biggest mistake to allow ArcelorMittal in a protected industry. And it is like a drug addict, you know. You get them hooked, they want more, they want more, they want more. And in the end, you realize you're dealing with, you just could have to pay for it yourselves. So in a way, the government gave up on ArcelorMittal, but they created the problem from day one. The biggest problem is the downstream industries. As Gerard mentioned, the smaller companies, they're going to get wiped out in the process. And that won't be newsworthy. So there's secondary and tertiary industries, downstream and upstream, that'll get wiped out. And the headline number of people being unemployed is 3,500. But they've got dependents. And let's say they've got 4 to 5 dependents each that will have no income. And then the other industries that get wiped out in the short and medium term, you know, the impact's probably 20,000 people, 30,000 people that are going to get wiped out by this. And it's entirely government inefficiency. And then foreigners look at what's happening and they see ArcelorMittal pulling out. They don't look at the reasons. They see Shell pulling out. They see Mobil, Exxon pulling out. And they say, South Africa is not worth investing in. And it really isn't. I mean, I came back from holiday really, really pissed off with South Africa and South African business and thinking, I don't want to invest anymore. I've had it. It's just nothing's happening at the GNU level to give me confidence that there's going to be economic growth over the next 2 years. I think we're, you know, moving the deck chairs on the Titanic. That is what's happening right now. There's a little moment of hope over experience, maybe 2-3 years of everyone being happy again, and then we look into the abyss.
So it's gnurophoria, like ramophoria in your mind.
Correct. You know, the DA don't have one significant ministry where they actually affect proper capitalist ideology, removing inefficiency, removing all the cadres and the useless ANC nonsense that has built up like, you know, plaque in your heart over years. And the country's heading towards a heart attack.
You know, it's
the
very.
The DA doesn't have one ministry that makes a difference.
Well, there are, I don't know, Steenhuisen will tell you that we are exporting a whole lot of agricultural products to China now, which weren't there before. And there, I think it's difficult to be absolute, but in the same way as you've been thinking about South Africa, I was thinking as well, and using a bit of Charlie Munger's approach, which is invert, always invert. And the way to invert South Africa is to say, How are you going to stuff up this economy? Just start from the point of, if you wanted to bugger up the economy and make sure there's no economic growth, what would you do? Ah, okay. Well, the first thing you'd do...
You'd hire the ANC.
But be more specific. The first thing you'd do, surely, is exactly what Gerard was saying earlier. We will tell you who you have to employ and how many of those people you have to employ. And then who you can do business with. And by the way, if you're bigger, if you're of a certain size, we'll tell you who your partners need to be. And then they won't be partners that will pay you anything. They will have, well, some kind of political influence for as long as those people that they have influence with are well looked after. And then we'll also stuff up the ability for you to export your products into the international markets. And we'll make the cost of your production here excessive by giving you extremely high electricity prices. And so when you look at it from that context, jeepers creepers, we have almost a design for economic suicide. And maybe Gerard, I'm excessive here, because I also, like Rob, when I go on my break, I think a lot about deeper things. And this came to me after listening to a Charlie Munger podcast just before he passed on. And it was a reminder of the way that a rational mind thinks. And a rational mind always looks at, well, what don't you do to ensure that you aren't going to have that outcome? And when you have all the negatives, well, then you can turn them around. And it was almost to me like we've created a structure in South Africa which is guaranteeing us not to have economic growth. Your thoughts, Gerard?
Alec, let's dive in quickly. And you're missing one big element, education. We're failing massively on education. So we're creating generation after generation of uneducated, hopeless people. How do you fix that? That's not something you can turn around quickly. Gerard and I could fix the economy in 12 months. We can get the economy going at 5, 6% in 12 months. It's easy to fix if you have half a brain and a commitment to capitalism and free markets. But the education side is generational, and that's going to hold us back for forever.
What is so interesting, just to add on what Rob is saying, you stuff up the education system from top to bottom, and then you say to the market, you must do your appointments on a spreadsheet. Now, it goes against the grain of anyone. A businessman says, if there's two people in front of me, the one's abilities, if you could measure it exactly, is 50.1% and the other one is 49.9%. Which one will you take? I say, I'll take the one 50.1, taking everything into consideration. Well, but what about transformation? I cannot employ on the basis of transformation. I pay the person. And you know what? The government tells you who to employ. And when the employment relationship goes wrong, they say, but we've got nothing to do with it. You get rid of that person. You go and fight it. That will cost you. And you know, strangely enough, the employment relationship and the regulations, all about the act, the legislation, the regulation around it, push prices or wages down. Why? If I can tell a person, work for me, I pay you so much, but if things go wrong, I'll tell you to go immediately. I'll pay you more. But now I have to build into the relationship and into my remuneration the risk of things going wrong. Now, a businessman employs who he wants. Therefore, it will not work. We will find a way somewhere, and NIASA is going to litigate about the employment equity thing. We're busy working on it. Just yesterday, somebody sent to me, Thierry Jager sent to me, what's happening with the export of fresh produce. So what governments want to say is, unless your BE scorecards is on a certain level, you cannot export. Now, the big farmers, I mean, these are family businesses. How do you BEE a family business? Well, the simple answer is you can't. Now, you know, we're dealing with people in politics that had no experience of business. They haven't built a thing. Now, somebody will say, Alan, you can't say that. I say, well, of course there's businesses that created something from nowhere. But that's not the guys they cater for. This is beyond stupid because they don't understand how a business works and what drives business and what makes business successful. It doesn't matter what obstacles a business get. They find a way. When AMSA, just something on AMSA, when AMSA threatened to close the long steel facility in Newcastle 6 months ago, some of the importers, some of the customers said to me that he left. He went immediately went to China because he said, there's a danger. I'm going to China. He said that in China, he met a flood of business people that said, AMSA is going to drop us. We fly to China. That's what business people do. They find a way. But what government is doing, they say, we will make it difficult for you in every respect. We will, if you find a loophole, because business, that's what we do. We find a way because there's no fallback position. We can't do anything else. That's what we do. But they say, we will find a way. And that's what they spend their time doing, making it difficult for business. And this is race-based. Unfortunately, the debate on race, the heat on the debate is increasing. It is we back to the times when this evil times when we're back to that because the debate is now a race debate. And that's what it is. I mean, we must appoint on color. We must find partners. Now, partners is like a marriage. I mean, it is. There's so many factors that comes into play when you select a partner. And in culture, which I can't even define what is culture. But culture is, I find a way. You know, fathers do not appoint their sons in their businesses until that son has proved himself mature enough to become a partner. Government wants you to get partners. And what's just happened with the charter, the BE charter for the legal industry. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. They just cannot do it. This is when you've never built something from nothing and you say, oh, you know, it's very simple. You just appoint on color. That's impossible. We cannot do that.
Alec, just to follow up on what Gerard said, if you look at the 34 ministers in our cabinet, name one that had a successful business career. Other than Gayton McKenzie. Gayton McKenzie was a businessman for a number of years. He understands balance sheets, income statements, cost, productivity. I'm sure there are one or two in the DA that had interim business careers, but name one. I mean, Greta Mantashe says he worked for AngloVol for 7 years, and he's a communist today, so clearly didn't learn anything on the way. It's embarrassing. They're all politicians, regulators, bureaucrats. I mean, how do you fix a country when you have people that came out of an undereducated system, still believe in leftist ideology, which doesn't work, and are our ministers? We're in a hiding to nothing. This country is going down the plug, and everybody's kids should move to America, not Europe, by the way, because Europe's a low growth, anemic socialist hellhole.
Okay.
Everyone's right. Kids should go to America. End of story, South Africa. I'm sick of it.
And then we just slide down ever faster. No. I'm saying no, no, Rob, no. Let's go back a little bit. This is so clear. The evidence is clear. We've now got poor old Newcastle is going to get hammered because there were drugs administered, just a little bit of drugs administered in 2015. I love that the way that you described that, Gerard. 2015, 10 years ago, give a little bit of drugs and then it needs more and it needs more and it needs more and eventually, oh, well, the drugs kill it. So, first things first, stop giving drugs. But then I'll ask you, what about the motor industry? South Africa pays 30% more for vehicles than anywhere else in the world because we have a local motor industry that is subsidized by the South African population. But nobody complains. Nobody, the penny there doesn't drop. Try and buy a imported motor vehicle from anyone, anywhere in the world, and you've got a 30% duty on it. So what does that say about our future in that big sector. It's almost, you know, we're looking at ArcelorMittal, and I get your arguments, but if that's the case, there are other subsidized sectors in the country. Are you guys arguing that get rid of the motor vehicle industry and we'll buy all our cars from elsewhere in the world cheaper, but I don't know what we're going to do with all the guys who work in that sector. Just these are very complicated issues, but we do need a little bit of enlightenment to be able to move forward in a positive way there.
And keep in mind the social grants too. I mean, that's handing out drugs to the population. You know, they become reliant on the social grant.
Yeah, not many.
How do we
drugs.
Afford that going forward?
No, but the drugs, they are very, very minimal. I mean, it's 1,300 rand a month. That's not going to keep anyone
in. Over how many people, Alec? Over how many?
17 million people. But at the end of the day, a lot of them are vulnerable. They're kids. That's a whole argument on its own.
Well, why are they vulnerable? They're vulnerable because we don't have economic growth.
And they don't have parents. And we have societal issues that, well, where do they come from? Is it from apartheid? Is it from whatever? But let's just put that aside.
30 years of incompetence by the ANC. But let's get back to the auto industry.
Get back to the motor industry. I'd love to hear what you guys think of that. Gerrit, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, well, that's a hard topic. That's a hard topic. The fact is, the taxpayer is paying the taxes with which they sustain the motor industry. And you buy 40% more for a car. So, you know, does the consumer benefit? I say no, nobody benefits. The only people that benefit is the motor industry, the employees of the motor industry, and the dependents of the guys working for the motor industry and the shareholders. Nobody else benefits from it. Now, I'm not saying just stop that because, I mean, that will kill West London and East London or East London. I mean, that is a complicated thing. But here's the thing. This is the lesson. When a socialist government or socialists interfere, the moment you start applying a particular dose to help somebody else, the moment I help A, it impacts negatively on B. So I have to apply it to B and then to C. And then you run into difficulties. So you say, listen, we need to give a bit more to B because the lobbies for B say they can't survive. And then A say no. Because what's happening in the steel industry, just to be an example, government in the black industrial empowerment drive established minimals. They invested 42 billion rand in those minimals. Those minimals has become a competition for AMSA. So AMSA is complaining and saying, no. The minimals get cheap scrap metal. So government, because government has introduced certain measures on the exportation of scrap metal to help the minimals. AMSA says, no, withdraw those measures because that prejudices us. So here's the thing. When you start interfering in the market, well, that's what you get. It never ends. You and you don't take away from one to give to the other. Well, you give to one, then the other one complains, so you give to the other one. When B complains, you don't take away from A, you just give more to B. Then A complains and you give more to A. So you have a system where anywhere, and there's many industries, it applies to chicken. And I mean, it even applies now to solar panels. Can you imagine that government says, listen, there's a certain, if you want to export solar panels, Eskom screwed up, so we need to import solar panels. Government says there's a 10% levy import duty on solar panels. But you've screwed up the industry. We need to get this stuff cheap. No. There's an import duty on. They interfere. They mess up everything. And then they try to fix it. But there's the other thing, other side to this thing. These duties brings in billions and billions as into the coffers of government. So they relied on this as well. So, you know, they've started the thing. This is a never-ending thing. And we are sitting in South Africa, and what we need is good competition where price, when we're industry,
compete with each other on quality and price and effectiveness. That's what we should do. That's how the free market operates. Unfortunately, the Western world is compromised on this, unfortunately. That's why we, well, that's one of the reasons why we're struggling economically. You know, the moment you tell a guy, listen, I can safeguard your business, protect your business through your duty, why wouldn't I invest? How much money has come from South Africa back to the parent company in Europe? A lot of money. It's not invested here, but why don't we don't need to invest here? Because duties will protect us. Now, you know, we've most probably come very close to the end of the line, and I think what is going to happen is that the flat steel product, AMSA, will go. The whole AMSA, the entire AMSA will go eventually. Either Jacobi production or and compete globally, or, sorry, we'll have to import. It's like, you know, say, let's manufacture cell phones in South Africa, and somebody has tried that. Let's manufacture cell phones in South Africa, and then we put a import duty on cell phones imported from on Samsung and iPhone, etc. A 400% import duty, and then we make our own cell phones. Great idea, really? It's crazy. Can't do it. If you cannot make a competitive cell phone, don't make cell phones.
Rob, you're on that same page.
Yes, I am, 100%. But Alec, I want to ask you a question this time. Do you think that the ANC's destruction of this economy, the manufacturing sector, the deindustrialization that's happening, do you think it's malevolence or incompetence?
Sure. I think it's a mixture of both. When you listen to Anthea Jeffery and the path, her book, or if you read her book, about the countdown to socialism, there's definitely a high degree of malevolence amongst malevolent actors who believe that they have a better way, that socialism's never been tried, and boy, we're going to try it in South Africa, come hell or high water, even though we're going to take terrible pain for it. A little bit like perhaps what happened with the land grabs in Zimbabwe. Well, we know we're going to destroy the agricultural base, but we'll be better off once we've destroyed that by getting rid of the capitalist class. But incompetence is vast. When I sit in rooms talking to people, from Rob Davies to I like him, Ibrahim Patel, but certainly he's on a different page. And now their goddess, who I'm going to see, no doubt, swanning around in South Africa, Mariana Mazzucato, the leftist. Well, I was introduced to her by Ibrahim Patel.
She's awful.
Well, I sat next to her actually at one of the dinners there in Davos in 2018.
So sorry to hear that.
Well, I was given her books or recommended to read her books, which I did. And to me, it didn't make any sense whatsoever. But to the people who want that, who want to believe that that what she is proposing, it makes all the sense in the world. And in a nutshell, what she proposes is that the state has a bigger influence in the economy. In fact, that it decides on where the winners are going to be for the future. Now, you can just imagine in a South African context, if you've got the state deciding on that, how convenient an excuse that is to plunder at even greater than industrial scale, which is what we've had at the moment. So, Rob, my answer to you would be a little bit of both. Incompetence, but the incompetence is born out of an inability to really sit down, be humble, have a look at what's happened around the world, listen to people like the Vietnamese who have told us time and time again, you're on the wrong path. But we won't listen to the Vietnamese. We would rather listen to the ideological bankrupt philosophies from countries that are stuffed like Cuba, Venezuela, because they've managed to continue with it. But my question to you guys, how long can this continue for? Surely at some point in time, in this information age, in an age where we have social media, in an age where people are far better informed than the previous generation, somebody somewhere is going to say enough and no more, like they did with Arab Spring.
I think we're going to have a complete collapse before that happens. The phoenix will only rise out of the ashes once the place is burned to a shred. South Africa's doomed. You talk about malevolence and incompetence, and we can see it everywhere. But where's the counter momentum to that? Where and who are the people standing up and saying, this is the way forward? The DA are, you know, 21% are a little meowing kitten in the GNU. You know, Gayton McKenzie is probably the biggest supporter of libertarian, Malay, Bukele-type reforms, but he doesn't have a big enough platform yet. And the ANC are just dunderheads, like, you know, pushing forward RET and NDR and all that crap through a different form, the GNU. And then you have the monsters of the Mkhuntuwe Sizwe, which is, you know, all the clowns of the EFF have moved to the bigger circus of MK. I don't see any momentum, any opportunity, or even Elon Musk, who looks like he's going to get Starmer kicked out of the UK, and he's making a difference all over the world. I don't see him making even a difference here. South Africa is doomed. Watch. 3 years is all we've got. Get your money out. Get your kids out. It's over.
Okay. Well, I mean,
come on.
The counter.
Show me a counter. What's the counterforce?
The counterforce is education. The counterforce is distribution of information. The counterforce is what BizNews does in a program like this. Hey, guys, listen to these people. Look at what the facts are. Look around you and make your voice heard. Politicians do not act unless they are forced to act. They are the epitome of the comfortable status quo. It's when people get pissed off and say, we don't want to see what has happened in Newcastle. We don't want this to repeat itself around the country. Back up your ideas. We understand why these things have happened. That is a counterforce. And you know, there is nothing so powerful. There's nothing so powerful as
who's saying it, though?
We are saying it. You are saying it. Every day you're saying it.
I know.
Gerard is saying it. There are many like you, Rob. They might not have the voice that you have or the communication skills that you have, but there is these conversations are not just being held here. These conversations are being held in many, many households and businesses and forums around the country. I'll give you a good example. Gigi Alcock earlier this week, I was asking him about what the foreign spaza shop owners, how they've reacted to this incompetence. I mean, that is breathtaking incompetence by government, who now say, well, we're going to fix the poison food, which has got bugger all to do with the spaza shop ownership. But we're going to fix that by making the spaza shop owners register. So what have they done? Gigi says they all just go and bribe the local officials and they're all getting registered. It's another really dumb idea from a very, very out-of-touch government. And at some point in time, out-of-touch governments, and particularly in this day and age, get ejected by a population that knows better. And we keep saying education, education. South Africans are incredibly well-educated when you have a look at how they consume information through channels that don't mean you have to go to school anymore to go and get them. But anyway, you're on my hobby horse now, Gerard. I've taken up enough time. What's your thoughts on this?
So what are you going to do? Just on the DA became part of this government, and it seems to me that this ridiculous transformation has accelerated since then. Minister, Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry done about this thing? I don't know whether they have a voice, and it just seems to me that the GNU has given the DA's participation and GNU has given to the ANC a free pass to do whatever they want to do, because I don't see them. I don't see they've stopped anything, and the judgment is out on Bello. If they stopped it for a bit, I'm not sure. I will see. But here's the thing. So what do we do when the DA had to make this decision to participate in GNU or not? Was it driven by fear or was it a rational decision? Because people say yes, but immediately there would have been a huge decline. So here's my question, do we prefer a quick decline or a very slow decline? Because sometimes it's better to fall hard and quick than to fall over 10 years, because in 10 years' time, we will not have anything to offer resistance. We have it now. In 10 years' time, we don't have it. And I'm very concerned that this thing is going to bite the DA hugely, because I don't know what they're doing with respect. I don't know what they're doing. I just don't know. I don't see it. Maybe in the quiet back rooms, they have an influence. I don't see it in the area in which I and my constituency operate. We don't see a slowing down of race-based destructive transformation. We see an acceleration of that. And my question is to the DA, so what are you doing? And if you do something, please tell us about it.
Alec, the GNU seems to me to have one role only. It's not economic growth. It's not fixing the economy. It's not getting foreign direct investment. It's not about productivity. It has one role only, to make sure the MK doesn't get into power, which means it's going absolutely nowhere. And Gerard's right. Bella's being pushed forward. NHI is still being pushed forward. All these moronic bills, it is a free pass in a way for the ANC to just continue its destructive RET, NDR nonsense. And you say the voters aren't stupid, the voters are going to get cut for, the voters are going to have had enough. I disagree. If you put ANC's vote plus MK's vote plus EFF's vote together, it's two-thirds of the country. Was there really a cry out at the recent national election for a change? No. It was just a moving deck chairs on the Titanic again. If you add ANC plus MK plus EFF, you get to 66% or 67%, which means two-thirds of this country still believe in idiotic socialist nonsense and race-based rubbish. The ANC's had 30 years to do things in this country, and on every metric, we've gone backwards. So guess what? I don't think we're going to be in Argentina. We'd be lucky to be in Argentina. I think we're more likely now to be a Venezuela. This thing's going to fall over.
How do you change that?
Where's the hope?
How do you change that? How do you, Rob Herself, who loves South Africa, who lives here with his family, how do you change that trajectory? There's a question for you.
The DA have got to stop being pussies.
No. How do you, Rob Herself, what do you do to change that?
I get everyone to throw their money around Gate McKenzie. He's the only guy big enough, tough enough, strong enough, and now popular enough to actually make the right decisions and the right choices. He's a man of principle. He has no fear, and he needs a much bigger platform.
But he doesn't want your money.
And stop
he's told
thinking
you.
Cyril's...
He's told you he doesn't want
he
the money.
Does want, he wants our votes. He wants our votes.
Mm. Stop thinking Cyril.
Cyril just is beyond pathetic. You know, I'm not going to name names this time, but all the big businessmen in South Africa who had these private meetings with Cyril all the time have come back and say, he's our man. I mean, they're the useful idiots. Name the top 10 richest people in South Africa, and those are the names I'm mentioning. They are the useful idiots. We need to create a crisis. I think the slow death of South Africa, I think we should precipitate the collapse now and fix it, because otherwise it's going to be the frog boiling in the water, as Gerard said. I'm really sick of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Interesting points on that. R.W. Johnson actually agreed with you when he was writing ahead of the election. He said it might not be a bad thing for the progressive forces, if you like, to get into power and to completely mess it up. And then we will recover. The second point on that is that just after the GNU was established, the rand strengthened to around 17 and was getting even better than 17 to the US dollar. We're now above 19 to the US dollar. So it's as though the new euphoria is a little bit like the ramaphoria. But on the other hand, it never, never, never makes sense to destroy everything before you rebuild it. There's always hope. There's always the human initiative that comes to the fore. I believe I've always believed that human beings surprise us on the upside. And in South Africa, we've been surprised on the upside so many times before. But Gerard, from your perspective, what are you, Gerard Papenfuss, doing? Rob Herself is saying he's talking to those that he knows. And I love I love Rob's contributions because he breaks with his class, if you like, those very powerful, wealthy people. He tells it like it is, and they don't like him for it, I can assure you. They really, really don't like somebody who's you know, roughing up the show there or rattling the cage to the degree that Rob does, because they just want to keep making their money. Whereas from your side, Gerard, what is it that Niasa and Gerard Papenfuss is doing to make sure that, because we're going nowhere. We don't have those options, most South Africans, to go and live anywhere else in the world. We don't want to anyway. What are you doing to ensure that you can have your contribution to make this a better place?
I think I've decided that there's a few areas in which we operate and make a difference. And the one area is an area of labor law. Our government's interference in the relationship between employers and employees, that is a huge progressive action taken by this government from the outset. We operate there and we help businesses. We are involved in approximately 250,000 interventions a year in which we assist business. I just want to use another thing on the issue of, for instance, employment equity. The Employment Amendment Act was introduced on 1st January. It was supposed to be the act and the regulations with all the quotas. We said to government, if you can implement the act, because we couldn't stop that. But we said, if you implement the regulations, and the regulations give teeth to the act, we'll immediately take you to court. They didn't do that. So we said, all the consultations you've had prior to 1st of January 25 is rubbish. You can throw it away. You can't use it. Apparently, they've listened. So they are going to consult now. We will consult. We will do everything we can to influence this thing, because this is what we can do. And we've been fighting in the metal engineering industry for 15 years, and we've done a lot there. You remember we had our discussions. We're still fighting this. And we've spent millions, and not millions, tens and tens of millions in litigation, because that's the only thing we can do. And we will fight the employment equity thing up to the Constitutional Court. So this is the area where we can delay. And, you know, people say you only delay. But, you know, in the process of delaying things, you influence. And if it wasn't for our actions in the steel industry, in the IBC, and other industries as well, there would have been many, many more job losses. But the thing is that I'm saying to every person, we here, and you know, this is a big thing. We've got one life and we here. Some people cannot invest elsewhere. They're here. So, you know, influence the area in which you live. Don't be not involved. Be involved as much as possible and change. But, you know, apathy is the biggest issue in South Africa. People, I don't know why it is and how people cannot be involved, but, you know, it's not involvement that is given the opposition the green card, because it's happening. I mean, let's talk about steel for a moment. There are employers today that doesn't know why the price of steel is so high. They don't know it. So, but how can you not know? They don't know. Why? Because they don't read. I don't know what they do except reading social media or watching their cell phones. I don't know. But the thing is, following nonsense on social media, I don't know. But how don't you know? You must be involved. And there's an area cut out for every person. Go and influence that area. Make a difference. So, you know, my life with all this nonsense going out is I've got a very useful life. I actually enjoy it very much.
You know, Gerard, our family moved to Hermanus 2 years ago. And I tell you what, if only you could take the civil activism that happens in Hermanus and implant that everywhere else in the country, you would have the best, these well-known, well-run municipalities. People care here. You have a town meeting, 700 people pitch. I'd hate to think how few would bother in Johannesburg. So very good point. And there are people like you. There are people like Wayne Duvenage and others in the service industries who serve others, who are making a huge difference. And Rob, I think that's what keeps me positive. That's what keeps me believing that South Africa's just lost its way for a while. You know, the universe will eventually address the unfairness. And it is something that I was reading in Richard Tedlow's book, Giants of Enterprise, where he gives biographies of seven great American entrepreneurs. And he says, a great entrepreneur looks at the world as though it is always fair. It's going to be fair. And even though for a while it's unfair, the universe will realign and then repay you. Karma will be back with a vengeance. And I guess that's what keeps me going in this world that we live in now, when I see so much stupidity and incompetence all around me. But sometimes it's just ignorance. And I guess from what you've said, you are going to encourage people to support Gayton McKenzie. He's the guy that you've put your store on. Gerard, on his side, has said he's had a look at how he can assist with the labor regulations. But I ask you one final question to end off with, Rob. The DA is supported by lots of people who have got a stake in the status quo. A lot of wealthy people give money to the DA, and we know that the piper plays the tune of those who pay him. Given what you've said today, is there some of that perhaps that we are seeing now with the government of national unity, which we saw happening there was great excitement at the time, but the delivery has not occurred and the DA has not pulled out of it despite the lack of delivery? Or is the DA being the responsible person in the room, the adult in the room, and just biding its time until it can make an impact?
The DA has some very good people in its ranks. Leon Schreiber, Andrew Whitfield, and Helen Ziller, the best of all. But I think the DA is heavily compromised right now, and it's best expressed in the most cowardly response I've ever heard on the Israel issue, where John Steenhuisen said, oh, we need to wait for the ICJ's decision and these international institutions will opine. Whereas Gayton McKenzie said, nonsense. If you want to see a white man dance, look at this guy just dancing with his pathetic, pathetic response. And John, we've got to kick John to touch and bring Helen back in. She's got a spine, a steel, and a heart to say the right things and do the right things and team up with Gayton and run this country. I mean, really, I'm here because I love this country. I want it to succeed. I believe, and I'll do whatever's required. But there's no way I want my kids to be based in this country under this current government or the next government. They should be in America.
Rob Herzhoff, capitalist activist. Gerard Papenfuss is the CEO of the National Employers Association of South Africa, or NIASA. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com. Thanks for being with us. Until the next time, cheerio.